Good day. I'm Adam Angst, publisher of the Take Control eBooks and producer of the Take Control Live online presentations. This is the third of four presentations that Joe Kissel is giving on the topic of working with your iPad. For those who are joining us for the first time, Joe is one of the best-known names in the world of Apple writers, thanks to his contributions to Tidbits, his articles for Macworld, and his best-selling Take Control eBooks. Joe's technical expertise and amiable style have made him sought after for talks at conferences such as Macworld Expo and the Macmania Cruises, and he's given innumerable presentations to Macintosh user groups around the globe. Before I hand the microphone over to Joe, a few administrative reminders. If you are viewing this presentation live, please use the live chat box to ask questions or make comments, which we'll address at the end, time permitting. The lovely and talented Tanya Angst will be monitoring the chat during the presentation, and she'll rephrase questions as necessary, but please try to keep them concise. Remember, you do not have to take notes, because we'll update your season pass with full notes about everything that Joe says, complete with links to every product mentioned. We may not be able to send you the update until tomorrow, since we were all at Macworld last week, and as you can probably hear in my voice, I'm kind of sick this week, which is slowing things down. Should there be technical difficulties, sit tight and reload the page for information about what's going on. Without further ado, then, I give you Joe Kissel. Please give him back when you're done. Joe?
Thank you, Adam. It's nice to be with you all again for this third episode of Take Control Live. I would like to say hello to those of you that I was able to meet at Macworld last week. Thank you for stopping by, those of you who did, and introducing yourselves. I'm glad you've been enjoying the series, and look forward to further interactions. So, today, the topic is thanks for sharing. We're going to talk about all different kinds of ways of sharing stuff with your iPad. Now, before we get into today's topic, I want to do something that we promised we would do if the occasion arose, and that is to give you some updates on things we covered in previous episodes. There are three things I want to call your attention to today that are sort of have developed as we've been working on the series. In our first episode about dealing with the three R's, and one of them was, of course, writing, so text, we talked about lots of different kinds of text editors. And I found this great page. Somebody named Brett Terpstra has this iText editor's webpage, there will be a link in your show notes, that has dozens and dozens of iOS text editors listed and a huge feature comparison chart. So if you want to know exactly which apps sync with which cloud services, which ones of them support Markdown, which ones of them support all the various other features we talked about in the first episode, this page is a really fantastic resource that will help you to make that very difficult decision amongst different text editors. The second thing I want to tell you about is right after, like a day or two after our last show, the app ReadleDocs was renamed. It is now called Documents by Readle. And that Documents by Readle 4.0 is important because not only did it get renamed, it actually got a complete overhaul. So it now looks a lot different too. Now last month or last episode, we were talking about these sort of portal apps where you can connect to a lot of different cloud services and manage files and send them different places on your iPad. I talked a lot about GoodReader, and there was a comment that, well, yes, GoodReader is very powerful, but its interface is a little wacky and a little hard to get used to. So if you prefer ReadleDocs interface, which is really quite good and even better now in version 4.0, the app you should be looking for now is called Documents by Readle. The third thing I want to mention is that just this past Sunday, Super Bowl Sunday, it became possible to jailbreak an iPad or other iOS device running iOS 6 or iOS 6.1. I mention this today not because we are really talking about jailbreaking so much in this series, but I told you the first episode that I'm using a jailbroken iPad to deliver this series for really one reason, and that was so that I could use this little app called Display Out, which puts a little circle on the screen where my fingers touch, so you can see what I'm tapping on. Well, funny story. I went ahead and jailbroke my iPad yesterday so that I could not only show you where my fingers are tapping, but also I could show you some stuff that requires iOS 6, because previously I was running iOS 5. But it turns out that even though the jailbreak works just fine, this Display Out app hasn't yet been updated for iOS 6. So in today's episode, I'm very sorry you will not be able to see where I tap, and it's actually going to be especially painful today for reasons that will soon become clear. I apologize for that. Use your imagination a little bit, but let this also be a warning to you. Check out these things before you go and jailbreak your iPad. Alrighty. Now, before we talk a lot about sharing and I start demonstrating things, I need to give you a little bit of an apology in advance or a warning. I'm not quite sure what it is. We were practicing this presentation earlier today and we did a lot of tests. Some of the stuff I'm going to show you today is, it works great when it's just you and your iPad. When you have these additional layers that we're introducing here, so I have my iPad, but now I have the software running on my Mac to mirror what's on my iPad screen, and then I'm using Google Plus Hangouts on Air screen sharing to show you what's on my Mac screen that shows you what's on my iPad screen. In this process of cascading levels, some things kind of don't work right. Some things might not appear the same way on your screen as they appear in my iPad screen. Some things may be stretched or distorted, and there may be some unusually long delays in things appearing. I don't want you to worry about these things. I apologize in advance if what you see looks kind of odd or is difficult to understand. I will try to explain it as best I can. Suffice it to say that what you're seeing now may not be an accurate representation of what is on your actual iPad screen, but I wanted to let you know the reason for this is that we're doing some really difficult, really wacky things. So I beg your indulgence, and I will try to explain as we go along why what you're seeing is not the same thing I'm seeing. All right. First category of stuff I want to talk about is sharing a computer screen. Now, screen sharing may not mean what you think it means. If you have a Mac, you probably know it already has a screen sharing capability built in. You turn it on one Mac, you go to another Mac, you can click a couple of buttons, and you can see what's on the first Mac screen, and you can control your mouse and keyboard and so forth. Windows also has a screen sharing capability built in. So, and almost any type of computer you might have, you can at least add software that will let you share your screen and then view it and control it on another computer. So, of course, your iPad can run apps that support screen sharing as well. So if you want to see what is on your Mac screen or what is on your PC screen on your iPad, you can do that. And I will give you a demonstration of one way to do that. But the thing that you're sharing doesn't have to necessarily be a real Mac or a real PC. It could also be a virtual machine. So let's say you're using VMware Fusion or Parallels Desktop or some other virtualization program to run one operating system inside another. Well, in fact, you can share that embedded operating system, that guest operating system screen onto your iPad without having to have the extra layer in the middle. So you can share, in this example, just Windows, just the Windows virtual machine that you have running on your Mac onto your iPad. Now, if you can do this, if you can share a virtual machine from a local computer onto your iPad, you might imagine that you can do the same thing with a virtual machine in the cloud, which you can. So even if you don't have a copy of Windows, there are servers out there that run virtual copies of Windows, and you can connect to those and display those on your iPad. But now think about what we have. Let's say you're running Internet Explorer or Microsoft Office. All right, you have Microsoft Office running in Windows in a virtual machine in the cloud on your iPad. That's a lot of layers and could be too many. So what if we took out one of those layers? It turns out you can actually take out the Windows layer, and there is a service we'll talk about in a few minutes that lets you use just Microsoft Office in a virtualized environment in the cloud, but without the Windows part of it. So that's pretty cool, and I'll show you that in a minute. Now, before I demonstrate several of these services, I want to give you a few warnings. These apply to all the kinds of services I'm going to talk about in the next 10 or 15 minutes. The first is, everything is dependent on your internet connection. So whether you're connecting to another computer that's nearby and you're on the same Wi-Fi network, or you're connecting to a service in the cloud, or you're connecting to a computer far away, your iPad needs to have a reliable high-speed internet connection. You are pushing a lot of data, a lot of pixels over Wi-Fi. So if you have Wi-Fi, that's the best. If you have LTE, 4G, a very fast cellular connection, that's okay. If you have 3G, it will kind of work, but not great, and anything less than that, just forget it. So the speed of your internet connection is crucial to these things working well. Even if you have a fast internet connection, there's going to be some lag, some delay, because you're not just showing actual controls on your iPad screen, you are showing images of controls on another screen. So it takes a lot of work to get those pixels in one direction and the information about where you've tapped in the other direction. Next, there's this whole issue about the screen size. So, you know, whatever resolution your iPad screen is, the Mac or PC or virtual machine that you're connecting to might have a different resolution. So if those two don't match, your iPad has to do something, either scale the remote screen up or down so that it exactly fits on your iPad screen, or give it to you full size but allow you to pan and scroll around. Now, either way, it can be kind of awkward. If you have, as I often do, you know, two 27-inch displays side by side, and you try to connect to that using screen sharing on an iPad, those two displays shrink down so that you can't read the text, you can't operate any of the controls, it's just far too tiny. On the other hand, if I show it full size, so I'm just sliding the image around to see a little part of it at a time, I can never see enough of my screen to do anything useful. So of course you can often zoom and you can do different things, but because of the potential for problems when there is a screen size mismatch, my advice is, if possible, set the resolution of the computer that you're connecting to be the same as or similar to that of your iPad screen. Then there's this issue of touchscreen compatibility. Of course, your iPad was built for fingers to operate it, with no mouse and no keyboard other than the built-in virtual keyboard. But Mac OS X wasn't built that way, and most versions of Windows weren't built that way. So when you're trying to superimpose a touchscreen interface on a non-touchscreen operating system that is designed to expect a mouse, you have to make certain compromises. So you might have to jump through some hoops to make sure clicks and right clicks and drags are registered properly. Things just might not work the way you expect them to, and some things might not work at all. For example, if you have something that happens when your mouse pointer hovers over some control, if you don't have a mouse pointer, then there can't be any hovering. So just be aware that as cool as these things are, there are a bunch of limitations that may make it a less than fantastic experience. All right, so let's talk about the first category, which is connecting to a real Mac or a real PC. Mac OS X uses an industry standard protocol called VNC, Virtual Network Computing. So simply by turning on screen sharing, you are enabling another person or another computer to connect to your Mac. Of course, you can set it up with passwords and so forth, so it's safe. But it is a protocol called VNC, and there are lots of VNC clients you can get for the iPad. On Windows, the standard protocol is RDP, Remote Desktop Protocol. And again, there are lots of RDP clients for the iPad, and most screen sharing clients have both of those capabilities built in. There are also screen sharing systems which decide to abandon either of those two standard protocols and go their own way with something proprietary. What you will most often see is that you will have an app on your iPad, and then you also have an app that you install on your Mac or PC. Now, even though your computer might have its own screen sharing capabilities built in, the app that you will install on your computer adds some neat features. For example, it adds discoverability. So if the computer you're trying to connect to is behind a NAT router or a firewall or something else where you don't know and can't guess its IP address or its domain name, These tools will help your iPad to find it in the cloud. Acts as a sort of a conduit. And the other thing that, one of the other many things that these apps can do is enable your iPad to wake up your Mac or PC if it's asleep. So there's a capability called Wake on LAN, and if this is enabled, then by trying to connect to your computer with your iPad, you can wake up a sleeping Mac or PC and then display its screen. So there are many, many pieces of software that do this sort of thing. Here are just five examples. If you do a search in the Mac App Store for VNC or RDP or screen sharing, you will find tons and tons of them. Now, I've used several of these, and I've also used a number that aren't on this list. I'm going to just point out on this list, all of them come with these companion apps that you install on your Mac or PC, except for Jump Desktop. And all of them use VNC or RDP, except for LogMeIn and Splashtop 2, which are proprietary. So just to give you a sample of what this might look like, I'm going to jump out of Keynote and try LogMeIn. And we're going to see if we can log in to the Mac that I'm actually giving this display on. This might be a little bit funky. So I've already set it up. It's connecting to my screen. Yes, I know how to do all that stuff. All right, so you are now looking at the screen of my MacBook Pro, which is looking at my iPad screen, which is, if we let this go, you're going to see this sort of infinity mirror effect. And I know that it's very, very small on your screen. You may not be able to quite tell. But trust me, you are seeing what is on my Mac screen on my iPad, which is, in turn, on my other Mac screen. Is your mind blown yet? My mind is blown. I don't even want to think about this, really. It's making my head hurt. I do want to show you, though, a cool thing about LogMeIn. Remember I told you that there is this issue with trying to use a mouse-based interface with your finger? Well, LogMeIn does this neat thing. There's this thing here in the middle. And I don't know if how well you can see this, but there is a sort of a blue blob, which is actually supposed to be a little mouse. And this is about a half inch below your actual mouse cursor. And so it gives you a bigger target. And instead of trying to tap on the actual pointer, you tap on this bigger target, you get it where you want it to go, and then you tap it to click your mouse button. And there are lots of other things you can do. You can change your screen resolution. So if you can go in here and you say, well, you know, I don't really want it to be 1920 by 1200 because that's just too much. You can choose a different resolution right without having to go back to your Mac or PC. You can change it right from within LogMeIn. There are lots and lots of other great features to see your handout. All right. Next category, a virtual machine running on your Mac or PC. And bear with me, it might take just a moment for the connection to catch up here. That's interesting. Apologies. Eventually, you will see on your screen, there you go, virtual machine on a Mac or PC. Now, I'm just going to tell it like it is. There are lots of virtualization programs. The big three are sort of VMware Fusion, Parallels Desktop, and VirtualBox. Of those three, I personally like VMware Fusion the best. Wrote a couple books about it. Now, there was recently a massive, massive article in MacTech comparing the latest versions of Fusion and Parallels, doing tons and tons of benchmarks and all this testing, and as is often the case, Parallels came out somewhat faster. And that's true. Parallels is faster. I still like VMware Fusion better because of its features and its interface, but it's okay. Use whichever one you like. But if you want to share your virtual Windows machine from your Mac to your iPad, then I recommend Parallels, no question. Because although you can do it in VMware Fusion, it's really complicated and obnoxious and it's not fun, whereas Parallels makes it easy. So you want to have Parallels Desktop on your Mac, which is $80. You also need this $5 iPad app called Parallels Mobile. And I'll just show it to you real quickly. So I'm going to open Parallels Mobile. And what you're seeing on your screen is not what I'm seeing on my screen because reasons. But what I'm seeing on my iPad screen is a list of virtual machines that I can connect to. And Parallels Mobile even will let you share your entire Mac screen if you want, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to tap Windows 7, and it's telling me it's suspended right now, so I'm going to tap to resume it. And hopefully when Windows 7 resumes, which will take just a moment, you will see Windows running on my MacBook Pro, running in Parallels on my iPad by way of Reflector through Google Hangouts on Air. Oh, look, it's installing updates. Imagine that, Windows installing updates. 10 of 69, okay. Well, you know, as exciting as it might be to sit here and watch updates being installed, let's not. And take my word for it. This is Windows very slowly pushing those pixels across, running in Parallels Desktop, running my Mac. And again, if you were using this live on an actual iPad with all this other intervening stuff, it would be very, very zippy. So don't worry about... pay no attention to that man behind the curtain. Now the third category, a virtual machine in the cloud. There are a bunch of companies that are offering this service. They have these big server farms, they have lots and lots of servers running lots and lots of copies of Windows or Linux or whatever, and you simply say, yeah, I want one of those on my iPad screen. You have your own little space, and done. I want to talk about three very briefly, and I'll show you one of them. So OnLive Desktop gives you a version of Windows. It's not Windows 7, it's not Windows 8, it's actually Windows Server 2008, a customized version of it. Still, it is a full version of Windows. And that version of Windows has Microsoft Office installed, it has Internet Explorer, it has a lot of the tools that you'll need. You sign up for an account and run the app, and basically you have Windows on your iPad. Of course, remember all those caveats from before, internet connection, speed, and so forth. The second service is called Nivio, and an hour ago, as I was frantically doing my last-minute preparations for this show, a guy from Nivio called and said, oh, I saw you sign up for a trial account yesterday. I want to make sure you know about all the features and benefits of Nivio, and this is not the time. Yes, some other time. So Nivio also gives you a copy of Windows running on your iPad. In this case, it's Windows 7. Nivio has a little bit of a different model. You pay a monthly fee to access the service, and then you pay an additional rental fee to rent a particular app. So let's say you just want the basics, just basic installation of Windows, some maybe free open source software, you can pay the lowest amount. You want to rent Microsoft Office, you pay a higher amount, but only for the months you're actually using it. You want Microsoft Project or some other app that they have, you pay them an extra monthly fee, a couple dollars, let's say, and then you get access to that app for that month. So it's just a different kind of a model. And then there's Always On PC. I'm not going to show you that, but I'm just going to tell you about it briefly. Instead of using Windows, Always On PC gives you a virtual copy of Linux. And so you get openoffice.org, which is an Office-compatible suite, word processing, spreadsheets, presentations, and so forth. You get Firefox and Chrome and Dropbox and a lot of other apps that you might not have on your iPad, including support for Flash and so forth, but it's all on a virtual machine. So let me pop out here and show you OnLive Desktop briefly. Of course, you'll have to sign up for an account. You'll have a username and password that you'll enter, and you will sign in. And again, there will be a little bit of a lag here, so bear with me. And once it loads, you will see the Windows Desktop. Anytime now, it's already on my iPad, should appear on your screen now. Great, okay. So you'll see there are shortcuts on the desktop to Word, Excel, PowerPoint, Internet Explorer, Adobe Reader, and I'm just going to open a sample file here. I'm going to do it more quickly than the screen will actually refresh, just because I don't want to waste your time, but I'm going to open a sample Microsoft Word document. It's going to launch Word 2010. This is, of course, the Windows version of Word. load that document, and in just a minute you should see here we have Word 2010 running on virtual copy of Windows in the cloud on your iPad. Now, if you need to edit Office documents, this is what we talked about last time. So, you know, here are all the apps, the native apps that you can use to edit Office documents on your iPad, and there are all these comments and questions. Oh, Joe, did you know about? Yeah. I knew about, and this is what it is. So you can actually run Word for Windows on your iPad, and it works. There it is. But keep in mind that you are still superimposing a touchscreen interface on a keyboard mouse interface. There will be a lot of network lag, and a lot of the built-in iPad features, like, you know, autocorrect and so forth, won't work quite the way you expect them to. It does work, but I wouldn't want to write an entire book this way. This is something that I would use for very brief chunks of work when I didn't have any other choice, but not something I would use all day, every day. And of course, Excel and PowerPoint and all the rest work as well. Now, I want to quickly go to the final category of screen sharing, which is a virtualized office environment. I told you that it's possible to have a virtualized copy of just Microsoft Office without the actual Windows part. And you can do this thanks to an app slash service called CloudOn. And let me just show you CloudOn very briefly. Now, when CloudOn loads, you don't see the Windows desktop because there is no Windows desktop. Well, if there's no Windows desktop, there's no Windows, there's no Windows Explorer, where do you keep your files? You keep your files in the cloud. You can connect to Box, or Dropbox, or Google Drive, or SkyDrive. And you can open any Microsoft Office documents that you have stored in one of these locations, or you can create a new one. So I'm going to tap the application button at the top, and I'm going to tap Microsoft Excel, and I'll just give it a name, and we'll tap New. And it's going to store this document in the cloud, and in just a moment you will see an Excel spreadsheet. Right there. Great. Now, in my testing, I found that OnLive Desktop was more pleasant to, CloudOn, getting them confused. CloudOn was more pleasant to use than OnLive Desktop or Nivio or these other ones. I liked the display better. It was more responsive, it was faster, and of course you don't have all that weight of Windows and all that other clutter. I already use cloud-based services like Dropbox to store all my files, so I find this quite convenient. It is a full version of Microsoft Office, and it's really quite easy to use. So if all you want to do in Windows is run Microsoft Office, CloudOn would be my recommendation. And I'm going to go ahead and stop that, go back to Keynote, and move on. Now, I want to, since we're talking about sharing, I want to talk about collaboration. Now, collaboration can take many different forms, and I apologize, your screen probably hasn't caught up with my screen, but it will get there really soon. There we go. Not quite. There we go. Collaboration can mean almost anything, and the way I think about collaboration might be different from the way you think about collaboration, so I just picked a handful of collaborative topics that I think are interesting and important and that you can do useful things with on your iPad. So I'll show you some of them. Now, because we have so many different pieces and there are all these layers of stuff going on with the network, I'm not going to demonstrate all of them, but I want to at least talk about some of the major ones. So video conferencing. Of course, if you have Google Plus or Skype or any of numerous other sort of calling apps, you can do video conferencing on your iPad. Now, I should mention, we're using Google Hangouts on air. That currently does not work on an iPad. But if you have a private conference with one person or several people, just a regular Google Hangout that is not on air, you can use the Google Plus app on your iPad to do video conferencing. And we've done this in tidbits all the time. Similarly, Skype, the Skype app for iPad, does video conferencing one-on-one or with multiple people. And as long as you're happy using one of these sorts of apps, you can do video conferencing very happily with the built-in iPad camera. Now, if you work in a corporate environment and your corporation uses some sort of other standalone video conferencing system, for example, one of these, you are very likely to find an iPad app that will let you tie into that. So you don't have to have a big telepresence system or special software running on your Mac or PC. It is very likely that if you do a search in the App Store, you will find an app that lets you do that sort of teleconferencing right from your iPad. Another kind of collaboration is shared whiteboards. So imagine you have a meeting. You want to do brainstorming, or you want to design a website, or you want to design a new product. Get a big whiteboard and give everybody a different color marker and just start scribbling and drawing and listing and outlining. Well, that's the idea of a shared whiteboard app. You have that kind of concept, only instead of a big whiteboard, you have a virtual whiteboard, and every iPad has a view into that. So the people don't have to be in the same room. They don't have to be in the same country. Each person can add to or make edits to this shared whiteboard with a pen, you know, a virtual pen of their own. So again, I'm not going to demonstrate this because it wouldn't be very interesting to look at. In the handout, I have links to a few of the popular and highly rated shared whiteboard apps. There are very, very many of them. So if you do this kind of brainstorming a lot, this could be a thing that you'd like to investigate. A third category is shared files, tasks, and annotations. So in the Take Control world, we are constantly writing documents that we are sharing with each other. I will write a draft of a book, and I will send that to my editor, who will edit that and then send it back to me, and we go back and back and back forth many, many times. And other people need to look at it too. A production person, a publisher, various other people need to look at these documents. So we commonly use either Dropbox or SugarSync to do this sort of thing. We have a folder that we have designated as shared. We've said, these are the people I want to share this folder with. And we all connect to the same place, so we modify a document on a Mac or wherever, and it almost instantly uploads to the cloud and then downloads to all the other places. As long as you have the sharing done correctly, that's fine. Now, if you're going to do something like this, you have to be careful that you don't have two people trying to modify the same file at the same time. Because if you do, there will be version conflicts and everything will go kerflooey. For Take Control, we evolved a sort of poor man's version of Subversion or Perforce or one of these version control systems. So we have little folders where we say, you know, we put a file in this folder to say it's checked out, and then nobody but the person who's checked it out can work on it. And then when they're done working on it, they will check it back in. And we have some other things we go through to increment the version number depending on who has edited it last. There, you can do that, and that works okay for the kind of thing that we do, but it is limited in that you only really want one person to be editing a document at a time, whether or not you go through these other hoops. Now, that's for just sort of plain file sharing, and that works fine, but you may want something that's a little bit different. So there are a class of apps that can do that sort of, can do file sharing, but they also add other things. For example, shared task lists and notes and annotations. So the idea here is you have a group that you're working on a project together, and you don't want to have a bunch of different tools. You just want to have one tool that your group uses to securely share all the stuff that's part of this project with each other and keep track of everyone's progress. So an app like one of these will do exactly that. You can see each other's task lists and the files and the annotations you made to PDFs and those sorts of things. They each have different feature sets, so you need to read the descriptions in the App Store to see what exactly meets your needs. But if you want to collaborate with others on creating files and managing tasks, there are lots of apps that can do that for you. Now, when you have a document that you pass back and forth between people, that is a sort of collaboration, but there's a different kind of collaborative text editing that we often do in the Tidbits world that, frankly, I dislike. I really, really dislike this. Some of the other Tidbits editors think this is loads of fun and very efficient. I try to avoid it whenever possible, but it might work for you. And that is real-time collaborative text editing. So remember the shared whiteboard where there's just a big white piece of, you know, virtual paper and everybody's scribbling in on it at the same time with their markers and you can see what everybody's scribbling in real time? Well, imagine a text editor that's like that. People are typing text. And I'm typing in purple, of course, and Adam's typing in green, and Jeff Carlson's typing in red, and we're all typing on the same document. So somebody could literally be editing the paragraph that I am in the process of typing. Now, when there's an Apple event, you know, a keynote or earnings report or something that we want to cover live, where there's just a lot of information to get down in a hurry, we sometimes go into a shared document and we're all typing at once. We try to stay out of each other's way so we're not typing over the same word in the same sentence at a time, but it allows us to build a document in real time and see what each other is, see what each person is typing and editing. Personally, I would rather write something, copy it and paste it, but if you like this, it can be done. One way to do it is to use something like Google Docs. Better to use the Google Drive app than the Google website in a browser, but using Google Docs, you can certainly have multiple people work on a document at once, and it can even include, you know, comments and change tracking and so forth. Now, if you want to go really hardcore collaborative text editing, you want PiratePad. PiratePad is a website, so this is all done in a web browser. It's in beta, it's free, and this is just plain text. You're not going to get all the other stuff that Google Docs has, but basically everybody gets a color and you are doing live collaborative text editing. So it's free. If that seems interesting to you, I recommend you check it out. Now let me switch gears completely here. We talked earlier about looking at what's on your Mac or PC screen on your iPad. Let's say you're sitting at your desk, you have your Mac or PC, and that's your main point of focus, but you also have your iPad next to you. How might you incorporate your iPad into your work so that it's not just that thing that you take with you when you're going out, but it's part of your desktop workflow? I'll give you a couple of ideas. One of them is to use your iPad as a secondary display. So if you're like most people, you're always opening windows and apps and have lots of stuff on your screen, and you can always use a little bit more screen real estate. You can use your iPad as though it were a second monitor. So what you do is you install an inexpensive app called AirDisplay. AirDisplay has a component that installs on your Mac or PC and a component that installs on your iPad. You simply run both of them, make sure they're talking to each other, and then your iPad will show up on your desktop or laptop computer as though it were a secondary display. You can put apps on it, you can drag windows over there, you can use that for, you know, Twitter or email or whatever you want. Now, I will caution you that because, like it, as in screen sharing, a lot of data is being pushed over a Wi-Fi connection very rapidly. This is not good for showing live video or anything that you need to be very, very responsive. It's much better for things that are mostly static. So if you want to put your email on your iPad or Twitter or something that doesn't have a lot of furious real-time updates, that's good. If you were thinking I would use this as, you know, where I would put my Skype video display, doesn't work so well. Another way you might want to use your iPad is you might actually have a task that you keep your iPad next to you doing. So maybe I have my word processor is on my Mac and I'm using my Mac to just do this and I don't want to have other stuff running on there, but I have my email app running on my iPad, or I have my web browser running on my iPad or something else. So I've separated the work that way. But then, you know, I copy something on my Mac and I go to paste and I realize, oh, the thing I need to paste it into is on my iPad. Or I have a website I'm looking at on my Mac or my PC and I want to show that website on my iPad. So I just want to mention a couple of apps that do this sort of thing. One is called My Phone Desktop, and I'll show that to you in just a moment. It's simply an app that you run on your iPad and a companion app that you run on your Mac or PC. And you can type text into one place and have it magically appear in the other place. You can copy phone numbers and URLs and images back and forth between the two devices very quickly and very easily. Then there's another really cool app called Handoff. So you install the Handoff app on your iPad, you log in, you configure it, then you forget about it. Go on to your Mac or PC. You install the Handoff browser extension in Safari or Chrome or Firefox or all of them. Again, you log in, then you forget about it. Now one day, you're browsing the web in, let's say, Firefox, and you come upon a page that, oh, I really need to put this onto my iPad. All you do is you click a button in your toolbar and zip, it shows up on your iPad. It just pushes it right over there. Now, it's not going to open in Safari. It's going to open in Handoff, in the Handoff app that has its own built-in browser. But it's still the fastest and easiest way that I've found to push a web page from one operating system to another. It's not the only way. It's the fastest way that I've found. If you have multiple iOS devices, even multiple Macs or PCs, you can click a button that sends a page to all of them at once. I find that makes me kind of crazy, but you can do it if you want, or you can select, I just want it to go to my iPad 3. It's hard to demonstrate these because I can't show you both my Mac screen and my iPad screen at once, but let's give it a whirl. I'm going to show you My Phone Desktop. When you open My Phone Desktop, also known as My Pad Desktop, for the first time, on your iPad, you see kind of a big blank window. That's not very interesting. But if I were to type some text into the same window on my Mac and click the Send button, you would see... Don't make a liar out of me. Normally it would happen faster, but there it is. So the text showed up. Let's try an image. So I'm going to switch to the Image tab on my Mac, and I'm just going to drag in a photo, and I'm going to click Send, and there it is. What a happy family. So if you have an image or a URL or a phone number or some sort of text that you want to zap from your Mac or PC to your iPad in a hurry, My Phone Desktop is the way to go. All right. Moving on. Our last topic for today, connecting to a secure network. Now, I don't want to belabor this because it really is quite simple, but ordinarily when you're out and about with your iPad, you're going to connect to whatever Wi-Fi network is available to you. If you're at home, of course, you can connect to your own Wi-Fi network, and hopefully you're using some very, very powerful encryption, WPA2 or whatever, to keep your network secure. But if you're in public, or if you're at a friend's house, or at a cafe or library or wherever, you can't necessarily know that your connection is secure. People could be eavesdropping on it, even if you were required to enter a password. And for a lot of business purposes, that just doesn't cut it. You have to know that your network is secure and that nothing is being sniffed or eavesdropped upon. In addition, some types of corporate applications really can't possibly work unless your mobile device appears to be on the very same local network. This is both for security and performance reasons and ton of other reasons, but basically there are lots of reasons for which you might need to convince your iPad that it is in fact part of a closed private corporate network. Luckily, iOS has built-in capabilities to connect to several common types of virtual private networks. L2TP, PPTP, and the Cisco version of IPsec. These are the three most common versions of virtual private networks. You simply get the settings you need from your system administrator. You go into the Settings app on your iPad, go to VPN, enter them, and then when you want to connect to a VPN, you literally just tap the on button, it makes the connection, and then from that point on until you turn it off, all of your network traffic, even though you might be using an unsecured public Wi-Fi connection, All of it is tunneled through this virtual private network, and it's all completely secure. It is exactly as though your iPad were hardwired to your corporate network. But what if you don't have a corporate network? Well, no problem. If you're just a person and you want to have secure network communications, there are lots and lots of companies that offer these sorts of services for a modest price. I've listed a few here. The one I have the most experience with is Whytopia. So I'll just take you over here very briefly to my settings. And if you go to General and VPN, you'll notice I have set up a bunch of different Whytopia endpoints. You can connect to various different cities around the world using various different protocols. Setting it up is really easy. You choose your protocol at the top. You enter the information your system administrator has given you. You save it. And then when you want to connect to the VPN, which I will not do now because it will make everything go kerflooey, you tap the off switch and it becomes on. And that's it. Now, if you want to use a type of VPN that isn't built into your into iOS, that's okay too. If you want to use OpenVPN or some other system, of which there are quite a few, just do a search for that type of VPN in the App Store. You will very likely find an app that will take care of you. Now, there are certainly many other ways of connecting to secure networks for enterprise kind of stuff. If you need to connect to Oracle or you need to connect to some other in-house system, again, do a search in the Mac app or in the iOS App Store. There is more than likely an app to do that. Because it's such a huge topic, I'm not going to get into the details of that today, but certainly if there's something in particular that you're curious about, do ask a question and I can put it on the list to investigate for next time. So that is the canned portion of the presentation and ending almost exactly on time. So now we have about 15 minutes for any questions that you may have, and I'll do my best to answer them.
Okay. Thank you, Joe. We do have a couple of questions that have come in via the chat that we'll answer next, but that's it for our prepared presentation. So if you need to get back to work, thanks for watching. And remember, you can come back any time to watch the Q&A session or any other bits you might have missed. Our first question is, is the iPad as secure as BlackBerry 10 when you're using a VPN? I don't know if you know any more about the BlackBerry 10 than I do, but thought we'd ask.
I am utterly ignorant about all things BlackBerry. So I don't know. I will say that as far as I know, a VPN is a VPN. I mean, yes, they use different technologies. So some of those technologies are less secure than others. So PPTP, which was sort of the one that Microsoft was pushing a long time ago, not as secure as IPsec, to take an example. But as far as I know, if you take IPsec running on device A and IPsec running on device B, as long as they're using the same protocol, they're equally secure. Now, I don't know what protocol or protocols BlackBerry 10 uses, but to the best of my knowledge, any form of VPN on an iPad is just as secure as the corresponding VPN on any other platform.
And I will say also that my understanding is that VPNs are considered to be very secure in general.
Oh, yes.
That they definitely this are. Is not something where you really have to worry about it too much.
No.
Oh, and actually, one thing I was mentioning in the chat for people while you were talking. A long time ago, when this whole thing with VPN started up and people were saying, oh, someone could sniff your traffic while you're at Starbucks or something. And I thought, you know, what are the odds that there's someone who is sufficiently technical and evil in your particular Starbucks while you are there transferring sensitive data? And the odds are really pretty low. You know, the fact is that this is, you know, it's not terribly hard to sniff data, but it is possible to do. But you have to be technical to want to do it. But however, the real problem that we've discovered is that there is malware for PCs. People have taken over nearby PCs. So, you know, there's a Starbucks, but there's an office building across the street which is in range of the Starbucks network. If a PC in that office building has been captured by malware, it can then sniff all the traffic in an automated fashion, deliver it back to the bad guys wherever they are. Yep. So that's really where we're seeing the concern. Okay, here we have another question. Viewers confused about creating a VPN on an iPad. Can I use this as an individual as opposed to a corporate user to secure my iPad use at a free Wi-Fi hotspot?
Yes, you can do exactly that. And that's what I do with Witopia. I mean, all those other ones that I listed, the hotspot shield and cloak and so forth, those are precisely designed for that. So you as an individual go to the relevant website, you sign up for whichever service plan you want, you pay a fee, you know, it could be $40, $50 a year or something like that. Then having paid that fee, you enter the settings that that service gives you, where I showed you on your iPad, and then when you need a secure connection, you just turn it on. And I use this all the time. So when I'm out in public and I have, you know, I have no idea what kind of a connection I have, maybe I'm someplace where I'd never even had to enter any password at all, so it's not, the Wi-Fi network itself is not encrypted. As soon as I turn on that VPN, I'm safe, because all of my data, although it's going over a public network, is wrapped up in this sort of virtual tube. It's all tunneled through this virtual network, completely encrypted. So from my iPad to whatever server it connects to, that's all encrypted. Now, of course, from beyond that server, all bets are off, but at least the connection itself is fine.
Good. Another question, do you have any suggestions for terminal emulators connecting to a Unix network? So if you need to control a remote machine via the command line.
Yeah, I like ISSH. There are a bunch of terminal emulators for the iPad. ISSH, I was tempted to demonstrate it today, but I didn't. And the reason is that it not only lets you connect to a terminal, but it also has VNC capabilities built in. So I actually use that very frequently to control my Macs in other rooms. But also, like, you know, my web server is running, is a virtual server running on a Linode, and when I need to log into the shell to mess with it, I use ISSH on either my iPad or my iPhone.
Tanya actually has a thought. Are there issues with VPNs in terms of shopping carts or things that try to sniff your location and make things appropriate for you that way? Do they run it because you're not sort of in the location they expect you are?
Ah, okay. Well, yeah, yes, actually. So, you know, I don't think of myself as really a scofflaw, but I do jailbreak my iPad. And when I was living in France, I wanted to watch American TV, and every TV network and Netflix and Hulu and like they all use this sniffing to say, oh, well, I see that you're in France and our regulations prohibit us from delivering our content to France, so I couldn't watch. So I got around that, as pretty much everyone does, by using a VPN. So I would turn on a VPN and now, oh, hey, my iPad now thinks it's in New Jersey or something. And more importantly, when I connect to Netflix, Netflix thinks I'm in New Jersey. So it had no problem delivering content to me because, thanks to the VPN, it thought that I was in the United States. And of course, I've done the same thing to convince CBC that I'm in Canada so I can watch Canadian TV shows, and BBC to convince them that I'm in UK so I can watch English shows. Now, this can work either for or against you. That was an example of it working for me. Connie's example of you're shopping for something that wants to say, well, here's a story near you because I've found your location and clearly you're in New Jersey when you're actually in California. So it can work against you. And there are even some services, I won't mention any names, but they expressly look for people who are connecting to those services using a VPN, or at least one they know about, or some sort of proxy server, and they assume that you must be up to no good if you're doing that, and then they will deny you whatever service you're trying to connect to if they notice that. There are ways around that, but let's not talk about that now.
Well, perhaps that actually leads to an answer to Jim Taylor's question here. He says he's found using Hotspot Shield sometimes prevents access to some sites using a browser. Is he doing anything wrong, or does it sound like the sites are just sniffing the VPN and refusing to work?
I couldn't say without having more information, knowing which particular sites and which, endpoint you're connecting to and so forth. But my guess is that they're doing just that. They're saying, "Oh, I see you're using a VPN." They might not actually tell you that I see that, but I've encountered that quite a few times. The services that are really keen on blocking access for people outside whatever geographical area, of course, are going to sign up for all these VPN services so they can find out what their IP addresses are and add all those to their blocked list. Wiktopia happens to be really good in this regard because they have secret IP addresses that, if you ask politely, they will give you. But there are, let's just say, there are ways around it in most cases. Now, China has been cracking down hugely on VPNs, and it's getting extremely difficult to find any way of securely connecting to a VPN from China and a couple of other places in the world, because that great firewall is just, they're really serious about being able to watch all your traffic. So it's not foolproof, but it's pretty good most of the time.
Now, with the VPNs, we've mostly been talking about Wi-Fi, but what about what's the security scenarios with cellular data, with 3G or 4G, LTE, that kind of thing?
The security situation is the same, but remember, with a VPN, your iPad has to do a lot of processing work. It has to encrypt all the outgoing traffic and it has to decrypt all the incoming traffic. So, using any VPN on any system is going to slow things down a bit. And if you are working on an already slow cellular connection, you might find that adding that processing overhead to the slow, the inherently slow connection gives you less than desirable results. So it can be done, yes, it just might not be as good.
The question is, though, would you even want to do it? Because with a cellular connection, the carrier is in essence sort of giving you a VPN to them. No one else is on that same connection with you.
Yes, but that assumes you trust your carrier, which I
Good point
don't
made.
necessarily. It's
Okay.
less easy to hack, but not impossible.
Right. I think the difference is that with Wi-Fi, there can be a bad guy on the network, there can be malware nearby. Those aren't a problem with cellular. With cellular, you're going to be in a situation where it's the traffic really is going to Verizon or AT&T or Orange or whoever it is, and then going
It's
out to the internet from them.
right. Yeah, I mean, it's possible to sniff that traffic, but you have to have some heavy duty equipment and skills. It's really not worth most people's time or effort.
And that said, there are businesses also where having a VPN is essential. You've got
Oh,
to
yeah.
have it. Your data is essential. And yes, then you just want to run a VPN all the time, no matter what.
Right.
Okay. Rewinding a little bit to a previous show, we have a question surrounding syncing with documents. Let's see if I can figure this out. Having trouble coordinating documents and books that I download onto my iPad from my Mac. iTunes tells me that I have to erase everything on the iPad and then it will load the one stored in iTunes. And Joan wants to go the other way. Basically, she's got all these books on the iPad, if I'm understanding correctly, that she doesn't want to lose and get them back to the Mac and then hopefully merge them all together. Is this something we should take offline?
I think we should take that offline. That could be kind of complicated. And although I don't know your particular situation, I'm wondering if it might be the situation that we have in our household, where my wife has bought some books with her account and I bought some books with my account. And if we happen to have logged in as each other on a device at one point, then we might have, duplicated books. But in some situations, that doesn't persist. So if iTunes on a Mac does not believe that you are authorized to read some content that's on your iPad, then it won't sync it.
Yeah, it's also possible in this case, and I've seen this happen for me too, that depending on where you acquired the files, some you acquired on the Mac, some you acquired on the iPad, that it's hard to get them to merge together. Yes. And that you may need to actually go down to either a different service like Dropbox, or actually just get them again. Not buy them again, but often you can re-download them on a different place. So, but we'll take that offline.
Yeah, good idea.
One last question/comment. The MiFi, which is a little Wi-Fi hotspot. Do you know if that incorporates any VPN technology or if it's just Wi-Fi? So you can VPN as well.
If I recall correctly, it's just Wi-Fi, of course. So what a Wi-Fi does is it has a cellular radio, so you can connect to 3G, 4G, LTE, whatever model it is, and you have just as though you're using an iPhone or something for tethering. So it connects to the cellular network to transfer data up and down, and then it has a Wi-Fi router built in, a base station that you can connect to. Now, of course, you can set up your MiFi to use WPA or some form of encryption so that the data going back and forth between your iPad or whatever device and the MiFi is encrypted, but that's a different kind of a thing than a VPN. That's just encrypted Wi-Fi. It's probably good enough for most purposes, but it's not the same as a VPN because it's not end-to-end. You're only encrypting the data between these two devices, which might be 6 feet apart. So it'll prevent people in the room from sniffing it, but it could get intercepted downstream someplace.
Got it. Okay. Well, I think that's our last question, and that wraps it up for the third show of Take Control Live, Working with Your iPad. Thanks to Joe for sharing so many great technical details, and thanks to everyone who asked questions before and during the show. We'll be updating the Season Pass PDF with all the notes and links that Joe discussed in the show later today, and we'll send you email when it's available for download. For our fourth and final show, we'll be back on the weekend schedule, Saturday, March 2nd, also at 1 p.m. Eastern. See you then. I'm Adam Angst, and thanks for joining us.